Hey, this is Gina Grad.
Hi, this is Teresa Strasser.
Hi, everyone. This is Mike Errico.
Hey there. This is Casey Cavalier.
I'm Rocky Rose.
And you are listening to The Jay Franzi Show.
Lucky you.
Welcome to The Jay Franzi Show, a behind-the-curtain look at the entertainment industry with insights you can't pay for and stories you've never heard. Now, here's your host, Jay Franzi.
Well, hey there. Welcome to the show. I am Jay Franzi, and this is your backstage pass to the entertainment industry. This week, we get to talk with a radio personality and a voiceover artist. We get to talk with Tony Scott. We'll talk to him about what it was like the first time he heard his voice on the radio, how he feels about doing celebrity interviews, and we'll discuss his future as a voiceover actor. Now, Tony and I, we met a few years ago. We've worked together on several occasions, and he is the announcer of this show right here, and I can't wait to talk with him about that tonight. So, if you'd like to join in, comment, or fire off any questions, please head over to jfranzi.com. Now, let's get started. Tony, my friend, how are you?
I'm good, Jay. How are you?
That is awesome.
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for asking. I'm fine.
I make you sit through your own introduction. That's pretty cool.
I've never had that happen before, but that's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, I get compliments on it all the time. So you did a great job. And I mean, I love this is what, the third or fourth time I've used you to do it. So
yeah. No, I mean, I have a ball doing it, man. I still do them on occasion when someone reaches out and, you know, other types of voiceover work that I do.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I know you're a busy guy. You've got a lot going on with your radio shows and your voiceover work. So why don't we just start there? I mean, what was it like for you the first time you heard your voice on the radio?
It was kind of like freaky kind of thing, right? Because, I mean, I don't think my voice is particularly special at all. So I stay humble because my 83-year-old mother, who I could call, she's probably asleep right now, but I could call her right now. And if she answered, I say, "Ma," and she'll say, "Ugly boy." And so she's called me ugly boy since I was like 12 years old. So when people here in St. Louis, you know, they say I'm a legend here because I worked here for so long, but I never consider myself that. But I always get humble when I think about my mom calling me ugly boy. But my first radio gig was in Wharton, Texas.
Oh yeah.
At a 500 watt AM country station. We played country music. And the first time I heard my voice, it kind of freaked me out a little bit because I was like, wow, that's me. But it was cool. It was a nice feeling, though.
The first time you heard your voice, was it the same as everybody else where you don't recognize it and kind of don't like hearing it?
Well, you know what? I've been doing radio for 42 years and I still don't like hearing my voice, right? Yeah, I don't. You know, it's just sometimes if I'm in the car and I'm listening to the radio and I hear my voice, I turn it down or turn the station or something because I don't really care for my voice. And then on the other hand, also, I know what I'm getting ready to say, so I don't need to hear it again. So it's like, you know.
So you're in Texas. You're on a country station of all things. Did you like working at a country station?
I'll tell you this. I learned to appreciate country music. I didn't dislike it. I was kind of indifferent to it, but I did learn to respect it and understand it. And yeah, I was indifferent. It didn't really matter because, you know, there was an old saying said, if you're a radio announcer, you announce. Doesn't matter what the format is. So that's what I did.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I worked in Nashville for 20 plus years and working in the country music industry. And it took a while. I mean, I come from Boston. It was rock or jazz. So moving to Nashville and working on country music was almost unheard of.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I liked it. To me, it felt like rock music after a while. You know, just about 10 years behind. So how long were you at that country station?
I was there a year and a half. And then I went to an R&B station in Houston. And then that station changed formats and went to light rock. And I remember when they changed the format, we had a meeting with all the announcers. And I remember the new program director saying, you know, we want everybody here to be part of K-Light. That's what they called it. We think there's opportunity for everybody. So we look forward to talking with you individually. And so when the meeting was over, he was like, I need to talk to you. And he said, you need to find yourself employment. We'll keep you till the end of the month, but we're letting you go after that. And I was like, but you just said that.
Right. It's conflicting information.
Yeah. So I got a job on an AM oldie station that was just signing on. It was brand new to the spectrum. And I did that for about a year and a half. And then I went to San Francisco. I did morning drive on a R&B station. And then I went to Detroit and did nights. And then I went to St. Louis for 26 years. And then I went, got laid off, and then went to Dallas and was there in radio for 3 years. And then I got laid off again. And I stayed in Dallas for three more years doing different things. And that's kind of like when I came across your radar. And then I started doing afternoons in St. Louis, but I was doing it from Dallas. And they wanted me to, they asked me if I would eventually, if I would consider moving back to St. Louis. And I said, yeah, but it was in the middle of the pandemic. And they said, corporate was like, well, there's nothing that's going on right now that you can't do from Dallas because everything's shut down. So we did that dance like three separate times. And then the fourth time, they said, well, we're ready for you to move here. And I said, okay. They said, well, we want to double check everything. And I said, well, let me know, because if not, I want to get a bigger apartment in Dallas, because I was in a little tiny apartment and I want to get something bigger. And then they said, nah, we're not going to be able to move you. So get your apartment. So I got my wife. I said, go find us a big apartment. She found us a beautiful, gorgeous apartment. And I signed a lease, and about maybe a week later, he called me and he says, have you signed that lease yet on that apartment? And I was like, yeah. He said, well, now we have it approved that we want you here. And I was like, well, you know, I don't know what to tell you, because it takes like, cause it costs like $2,800 to get out of this lease. And he said, I'll call you back. I said, okay. He called me back. He said, okay, we'll take care of that. I said, okay, you know, I need moving expenses. He was like, I'll call you back. He's called me back. He goes, okay, I took care of that. He goes, what else do you need? I'm like, I don't need anything else. I said, but I do need to stay in this brand new apartment for 2 months so I can get my $2,000 deposit back. You know, he was like, well, when will you be here? And I didn't want him thinking I was messing him around. So I says, I will be in your studio working the Monday before Thanksgiving. And he said, okay. And this was like probably September. So I had to be there for 2 months in Dallas. And then, you know, true to my word, we were there and I was ready to go that Monday. I'm on from 3 o'clock to 7 o'clock on the air. But I usually get to work like around one, because if they need me to do something, voice something or something, you know, I do that. But yeah, that's kind of how my return to St. Louis was.
I want to touch on that for a minute, but you said you got laid off and let go on about three different occasions there.
Yeah.
But that first one, did they ever even tell you why?
I don't know. To this day, I don't know. But I was like, I mean, I was still like a baby DJ, right? I mean, I'd only been in radio less than 3 years. And maybe they just didn't feel like I was ready for that format or something. Maybe they didn't feel like my voice fit or something. I don't know. And to this day, I really don't know. And I didn't ask. So I just had to hustle up and try to find a job. Because, you know, I wasn't married that long with my first wife, and our baby was a baby. So I needed to, you know, find something. Luckily, this one station that was signing on, brand new, this oldie station I was telling you about, the only thing they had left open was midnight to six. All the other slots were filled. So I took that, and I was making a whole $14,000 a year doing midnight to six. And then they bumped me up to $17,000 and put me in morning drive, paired me with this guy. By then, politics had settled into the building. And the next thing I know, I was moved to afternoon drive. Then I started noticing that things, like I'd come to work and the door was locked. And it'd be like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, right? And I'm like, you know, so I had to like knock on the door, and there was no cell phones back then, right? So I'm knocking on the door, waiting for somebody to pass by. And finally, the owner, who's also the general manager, came and he let me in. He goes, lock the door behind you. I was like, what's going on? He's like, he says, well, I'll just be honest with you. He says, we're having some issues, he says, and they're trying to repossess the copy machine. So we're locking them out. So then that was like a flag, like, you got to get out of here, man. So you got to find you another job, because this ain't going to be around long, right? So I ended up getting a job in San Francisco, and it just kind of took off from there.
That's crazy. I mean, you show up to work and they're getting ready to take copy machines and stuff out of there.
Yeah, yeah. But I always think about the Godfather movie, Hyman Roth, when he says, "This is the business we have chosen," right? So doing stuff like that, getting laid off, that's all part of what we do, and you hope it never happens, but it happens. Someone says, if you've never gotten let go, then you really haven't had much of a career. I'm like, wow. But then, you know, when the guy who brought me to St. Louis, when he got laid off, you know, we talked and he says, well, I'll put it like this. When I got laid off, we talked and he says, you can't be mad. He says, look at the run you had, man. Like 26 years. He goes, no one does that. He goes, so you got to take that. He goes, you can't let the fact you got laid off destroy you. You got to get back on your feet and stuff, but you got nothing to be ashamed of. So I took that and stuff, but you know, not being disappointed doesn't pay the bills when they're due. Right. So I had to hustle up and was able to piece together something for a while and then went to Dallas. And like I said, I worked there 3 years and got laid off again. And when I got laid off, my youngest daughter was starting at the University of Texas in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And so the look of horror on her face when I told her I got laid off is something I'll never forget. But I told her, you worry about your grades and I'll take care of everything else. So at one time, Jay, I was doing Uber Eats. I was working at a podcast studio. I was actually managing Reverend Al Sharpton's nationally syndicated talk show. And I was the guy on the podcast studio has started a radio network. So I was doing some stuff for him there. And I was doing a couple other things. So at one time I had like 7 different jobs that I pieced together to try and keep the lights on and, you know, until things started falling into place again. And I was able to, you know, reduce it, you know, and actually I had to stop with the Uber Eats because, you know, I'm not in any kind of physical shape and getting in and out of the car and going up and down stairs in apartment buildings, I gave myself like 2-3 hernias. And so I had to stop because it was painful going up and down stairs. So I was thinking, well, what can I do utilizing my skill set, right? And I remember when I worked at station in Dallas, I had to read a commercial and the production guy who was putting it together, he says, do you do voice work? And I said, no. And he's like, why not? And I said, I don't know. So I thought about that conversation we had, and then I started watching YouTube videos about voiceover, listening to podcasts about voiceover, and then pieced together some equipment and started in a closet full of clothes because, you know, clothes absorb sound, so it helps. And started with that, and that's how the voiceover thing started. And then when the pandemic really hit and I was working the Sharpton thing, my boss told me, we were talking, and he says, did I tell you to start working from home? I says, no. He goes, you need to start working from home. And he goes, starting in about 30 minutes. So I work from home and I will go up there twice a month to do timesheets for the people who were under me. But while I was home, I really started focusing a lot on my voiceover business. And that's kind of how, you know, that got going and stuff and fell in love with it. Actually, I love voice work. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, you talk about the industry, and I worked in entertainment as well. I worked as a engineer, a recording and mixing engineer in Nashville. And it was the same thing. You don't know when your next job's coming. You don't know where things are going to be. As soon as this project's over, you got to move on to another one. So while you're working, you're thinking in the back of your head, what's next and where can I go after this project is over? So similar to yourself, when it came time to get married and have kids, I had to get a little bit more grounded with it. So I moved more into the administrative side of the industry and, you know, similar to you, working in transportation and then into the security portion of it. But that was the way to guarantee that there was a paycheck coming in to put food on the table. Mm-hmm. So we do what we have to do. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned a couple things in there I want to touch on. Mm-hmm. One of them was doing spots. You go in early and you do spots. So can you start by telling us what a day in the life is like?
Okay. I get up in the morning and I'll look on some of, they call them pay to play sites where there are some auditions, and if they think something fits me, I'll do the audition and see what happens. And, then I have lunch and then I go to the radio station, usually between 1 and 2, start seeing if I got things they want me to record.
Now, when you say that, we're talking like commercials and stuff, right?
Yeah, commercials, promos for events, the radio stations doing things like that. Sometimes I have meetings with my boss, go over like ratings and stuff like that. And then sometimes I have me, like today, I had a out of the building a sales call with a potential client, and it was a lunch meeting. And so I went to that and then go back to the station and start working on my show. And I'm on till 7 o'clock. And then at 7 o'clock, I come home, have dinner with my wife. And then sometimes I'm the narrator of a YouTube channel called Nutty History. And they're 20-minute videos about history, and I narrate them. And sometimes I have a script between 2 and 4 times a week. I sit in this room that I'm in right now, my booth, and I do the audio part, the narration, and I send it to the guys. It's interesting because, let me get this right. So the guy who writes the scripts is in India, and I believe the guy who edits the video, puts it together, he's in Croatia. The project manager is in Los Angeles. The guy who owns it is, I think, in Idaho. And I'm here in St. Louis, but it works. You know, everybody is very passionate about the type of work they do. And everybody compliments everyone else. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, I'm human. Sometimes I make a mistake and they'll say, hey, man, you read this wrong. Can you read it again? Yep, absolutely. Give me 10 minutes and I'll knock it out for you. Right. And sometimes I do it while I'm on the air, like if I have a sweep of music or something that I don't really need to like talk for a lot, like for 15 or 20 minutes, and I got time to set up my stuff and knock it out and send it back to them. So that's kind of like how my day goes.
That's pretty cool. I mean, there's a few things in there. One, you mentioned you have meetings with your boss, mm-hmm. I'm assuming some sort of program director.
Right.
Do you ever have coaching sessions?
Air check sessions. Yes, I haven't had one of those in a very long time. The only time you'll have one is if I'm doing something wrong continuously. If I do it over and over again, I'm doing it wrong and I don't know. So then he'll pull his spoon aside and he'll say, hey, we're no longer doing it that way. We're doing it this way. You apparently didn't get the memo. And he's not mad. Nobody, you know, that's one thing about, like, for me, there's nothing at that radio station that's going to actually anger me. I might get disappointed. I might get frustrated, but mad? Nah, I'm not. There's no reason to get mad, right? And, you know, and I always make sure that he knows. I've told him before, I'm your soldier. So whatever you need me to do, you tell me, and, you know, I'll do it. But it's you know, it's a team thing. And, yeah, we don't really do air check sessions. I don't like doing them, but we don't do them because I don't like doing them. That has nothing to do with it. When I worked at the station I was at for 26 years, they would plead with me to come to the air check session because I wouldn't, I don't like hearing my voice.
Right.
And to me, unless you're in the moment, sitting in the chair I'm sitting in, talking into the microphone I'm talking into, if you're not in the moment, then you don't understand what was going on, stuff like that. But sometimes they'll point things out. You know, I had one guy, we worked together for a long time, and then he went up the corporate ladder and is a very successful VP for iHeartRadio. And he came to town and he says, I want to ask you something. And he says, this thing that you did, he goes, have you ever thought about doing it this way? He goes, because I think if you do it this way, it could maybe get you more listeners. He goes, but just think about it, right? He goes, well, you know, I'm not telling you that, you know, he goes, I would never tell you what to do. He goes, but just think about it, you know? And I was like, yeah, okay. So I did. And then I did some other thing. And I remember he lives in Los Angeles. He called me and he said, that thing you just did, he goes, where'd you learn that from? I said, I just kind of did it. He goes, I'm gonna have everybody do that. I'm like, why are you stealing my stuff, man? But, you know, we play around like that all the time. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you get with a good crew of people, and I've been really lucky because I've worked with some great people. I've worked with some, you know, poo-poo heads, but for the most part, it's been a great experience.
So when you go in early and they give you maybe a list of what needs to be cut, whether it's a promo or commercial or things like that, do you have time to prepare for it or do you just do cold reads?
No, I have time to prepare. I have time to prepare. And the thing is that I sit in the studio and I can just do it at my pace. And, and I do it, and then I send it to the production guy, and he produces it, and he puts music under it. That's what the client wants. And sometimes they'll, like, if I'm doing like a promo for the radio station about a concert that's coming to town, then like there'll be parts of it where he'll make it sound like I'm on the phone or something. And it's just kind of effects that he puts on stuff. And, you know, he's one of the best. And so all I got to do is read it. But that's not every day. That's not even most days. Like most days, I get there early just in case they need me for that. But most days, no, I don't record anything. And I just start looking for topics to talk about for the radio show. And then I try to tell the story before I actually tell the story on the radio, right? So I practice, yeah, you know what? And I'm like, yeah, they don't, that part's not important. So I'll like, you know, I'll take it out or I'll make a note, say, don't talk about this part. And then when it comes time to do it, you know, because I think I work an afternoon drive. I've worked morning drive before. And when you do morning drive, there's an expectation that you're going to talk for a period of time that can be anywhere from, you know, 1 to 10 minutes. But when you do afternoons on a music station, there's an expectation that you're going to play a lot of music, right? So I tell my stories going into commercial breaks or over the intros of songs. And over the intros of songs is challenging because you have a set amount of time. Like when I'm going into a break, I can do it in 40 seconds. I can do it in 55 seconds. I can do it in 20 seconds. But if I'm telling the story over the intro of a song and it's a 15 second intro, that's all I get, man. So you really have to like bear down and concentrate and focus on the story that you're about to tell. And so I try my best to over and over again in my head that these are the important parts. This part isn't necessary and stuff like that. So, and I actually was working with this guy for a while at the radio station. They had hired this guy to do news on our station, but he didn't have any experience. So I don't know why he was the one they chose. So I worked with him and I would tell him, he would record something and he hadn't listened to it. And I would tell him, okay, this part, you don't need to say this part. Okay. And then he would do the weather. And I was like, the only thing they care about in the summertime, how hot it's going to be. In the wintertime, how cold it's going to be. And if it's going to rain or snow. They don't care about the wind unless the wind is like 30, 40 miles an hour. And they don't care about precipitation. So you don't need to say all that. I said, just because it's on the sheet of paper don't mean you need to read it. Unless it says verbatim. But most cases, that never happens. So I said, just to keep it short. I said, because your segments are supposed to be really, really short. So his weather sometimes would be like 17 seconds. And I'm like, you're taking too long, man. Here it is. It's 10 minutes to four. All you need to do is tell him what the temperature is now. What's it going to be at 8 o'clock tonight? What's it going to be overnight? And what's going on tomorrow? So here we go. 68 right now. It should be 60 by 9 o'clock. Overnight lows about 40. And tomorrow it's going to be sunny and 71. How long does that take, man? Let's go. Ready, break. So, you know,
it's funny you say 17 seconds is too long.
Yeah. You know, so you gotta be brief with it so you can get back. The key is to get back to music.
Well, you say that too, right? So you're talking about even your stories you have to put over the intro of a song. Mm-hmm. Do you have a timer that's letting you know when lyrics are going to come in, or are you just winging it by your knowledge of that song?
It's a little bit of both, but most of the time it tells you on the computer screen what the intro time is on the song. Every once in a while, though, you get burned because somebody put the wrong time in there. Maybe they weren't paying attention or whatever. And so I do that. And so I go back and listen to it. Then I know. Then you get a feel for it. And then some song that you played for years, you already know what the intro time is.
Becomes more like playing an instrument.
Yeah. Play Waterfalls by TLC. And, you know, it's a 25 second intro. So then you just go. And the thing is that, okay, the song starts out. When it's playing on the computer screen, you see it's green. And then when it gets closer to when the vocals kick in, it starts to turn red. So you know that you need to wrap it up. And after you've done it for so long, it becomes like muscle memory. And so you just already know when to wrap it up and go. But you got to be focused, though, because you got to stay on point with the story. Otherwise, it's going to be disjointed and you're going to sound like an idiot, which I've done plenty of times.
What's the most challenging part about working an afternoon drive show?
Most challenging part of working an afternoon drive show. You know, they tell you when you get in radio, number one thing is to protect the license. The number two thing is don't tick off the advertisers. The number three thing is to execute the format the program director has. And so the third thing, it's not hard to do, but it does require concentration because depending on the program director, he may want you to go into your commercial break at a very specific time. And so you got to hit that mark. Otherwise, he's not happy. And my job is to be as low maintenance as possible so that he can focus on other stuff. I'm doing that for him. And on some level, I expect grace to be returned to me. And it always is. I mean, I work for a great guy, and he's a good listener, and he's got a lot of ideas. And it's worked out so far. He just started in July, so it'll be a year coming up. But he's been great.
Are you solo on the air, or do you have anybody else in the room with you?
Just me, which is what's interesting because, like, I had a team on my morning show for 26 years. And then when I went to Dallas, it was just me. And so that took an adjustment. But now when I came back to St. Louis, I had already adjusted, so I was good. But I think I'm at my best, though, when I have someone to work with.
I was just going to ask you, which do you like better?
I like working with someone because you can bounce back and forth off each other. And that's kind of, you know, most of my career has been that. So now it's like, it's just me. So whether it's good or bad, it's always going to come back to me. But I try, you know, a guy told me, the guy who brought me to St. Louis told me, you don't need to be funny every break. He says, being funny is great, but just be interesting. Be compelling. Don't try and be funny, because when you try and be funny, it sounds like you're trying to be funny. And that's never a good thing. He says, so just be interesting. The funny will come. You know, he says, you're that guy, so you'll be fine. You know, and then you have to understand your role. Like when I had a partner, every partner I've ever had has always been very funny. So I could be the straight guy. And they got to do the funny, and I get one in every once in a while, I run into something. But for the most part, that was on them, and I would set them up. And I would have the topics, and I would do the show prep. So one of my partners who ended up becoming my best friend, he didn't like to know what we were going to talk about. So I'd give him the notes, but he'd set it aside. He goes, nah, he goes, I want to be able to shoot from the hip. I said, okay, all right. So that was his thing, and it worked. So I would set him up, and then for a time, I had three people. And that's when I employed the Phil Jackson triangle offense, where we pass the ball and whoever had the funny take the shot and then we'd move on. You know, I didn't believe in someone having something interesting or funny to say. And then someone else had to top it. Your experience teaches you what's the off ramp to go to the commercials, right? And over a period of time, you learn that. Some people are born with that gift, but I learned it and I was able to, you know, somewhat master that. So that kind of worked out for me in my career.
The other thing, too, you mentioned whoever has the moment to have the funny can have it. And I think that's a skill within itself, is to know when to sit back and not, you know, not take the joke, to let somebody else have it.
Yeah.
When your show is over, they don't remember who told the joke. They just remember that they had a good time listening to your show.
Yeah.
You'll give them a bad feeling if you try to steal the thunder at all times.
Yeah. And that's never, like, been my thing. My show was always Tony Scott and whatever, whatever. So it was no need for me to fight for airtime because it took the pressure off of me.
Of course.
You know, and I remember there was one time, man, there was this comedy show going around the country called The Kings of Comedy. And it was Steve Harvey. It was D.L. Hughley. It was Cedric the Entertainer and Bernie Mac. And they were in St. Louis for a concert. Bernie was still in Chicago. He hadn't made it to town yet, but I had the other three in the studio with me. So really all I had to do was go, it's 8:15, and then I'd let them go, right?
Right.
And then I would raise my hand, and they would wind it up, and I would say, hey, we got more coming up with the Kings of Comedy. Right now it's 8:40. That's all I would say, right? So when I got off the air, my program director says, he goes, that had to have been the easiest money you've ever made in your life. I says, it actually was. And for years, people would say, man, you were so funny when you were on with the Kings of Comedy. And I was like, I didn't say anything, but you know, you accept it and you move on and you tell them thank you for listening. Because when you're in radio, you're always running for office.
Right.
The office is to get as many listeners as you can. So, you know, you get out and you shake hands and, well, maybe not so much anymore because of COVID, but you pound it out and stuff like that. But, you know, you're always running for office because you want people to feel comfortable with you, to listen to you. And, you know, I was here for so long. A lot of these folks, you know, I raised them, and they call me Uncle Tony. And so I'm Ugly Boy over here, and I'm Uncle Tony over here. So, you know, but it's the term of endearment, and I accept that.
Well, that's going to feel good to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does, actually, yeah.
So I'm curious, like the morning shows, I know I listen to a lot of morning shows, and I've listened to the afternoon drive shows as well. But usually the morning shows is a lot more opportunity to talk mm-hmm. than there is in the afternoon shows. That's why I think typically they have the co-host or the team of people mm-hmm. that they discuss news and current events and things. So how much opportunity do you get to talk during the afternoon drive?
I have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. I have five places to talk. Three of them are between songs, and two of them are going into commercial breaks. That's how it works for me. Now, if something happens locally that's, you know, an exceptional news story or something, even nationally, I have the freedom to add, you know, more talk if need be. But it has to be something very, very special.
So you skip songs at that point?
Yeah. You know, sometimes, like I have one segment that has three songs, and like if I have an interview scheduled because some artist is coming to town or something like that, I'll usually drop one song. I'll do the interview, and most of my interviews are pre-recorded. So, you know, I go on at 3, and if I got an interview coming up, they'll come like at 2, and then we'll talk for like 10 minutes, and then I'll edit it down to like 5 or 6 minutes, or I'll play it and I'll say, hey, for the rest of the interview, go to the website and check it out. Right. They like it when you do that, because now you're sending people to the website, which is good, because, you know, radio stations, you know, used to be the only way they made money was selling commercials. But now, and still, that's how they make most of their money. But digital is a very large part of their plan now. So the more people you send to the website, the happier they are. So you send people to the website, they love that. So that's kind of like how that works. But yeah, sometimes you drop a song, but not that often.
So you mentioned having a guest. So how often do you have a guest? How often does somebody come through town?
They come through quite a bit, but a lot of times the concerts are like on the weekend, and I'm not there on the weekend, so I don't really do the interview. Sometimes you do a phone interview.
Right.
Sometimes it's needed. I don't particularly care to do interviews, but it's not up to me. I can never say, and no, I don't want to do that. I would never do that. If you want me to do an interview, I'm going to do an interview, and I'm going to do the best I can at it. I prefer not doing interviews, because I think in the time we're in now, I don't think listeners really care for interviews. I think listeners, because you can get all that information on social media now. So I don't think, you know, it's really necessary anymore. But like if he says, or his assistant says, we've got this interview scheduled for you, I say, okay, cool. And I'll take care of it. And I do. And, you know, because it's not, I don't get paid to make those kinds of decisions. I get paid to execute the plan. That's how I look at it. Sure. I don't have an ego where I'm like, nah, I ain't doing that. And I've told them, I says, you know, like hosting concerts. I don't really care to host concerts because there's a lot of drama backstage just getting back there. And there's been plenty of times, you know, power is a hell of a narcotic, someone once said, right? I think it was Dave Chappelle. And sometimes those guys that are at the backstage door, they have a lot of power. And so they'll like say, hey, you're not on the list, so I can't let you in. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going home, man. So if they ask for me, man, just tell them I was here, all right? And then I'll call my boss and I say, hey, he wouldn't let me in. He says, my name ain't on the list. And I said, so I'm going home, man. I'm taking my wife out to dinner, so I'm leaving. And he'll like, okay, man. Because I'm not going to fight with anybody about that. I'm not going to fight. Yeah, my name's on the list. Check it. I'm not doing that. That's silly. So if you want to wield that kind of power, man, knock yourself out. And I'm going to go rest with the rest of my day. And the other thing is I like meeting listeners. And when you're hosting a concert, you're on a stage and you're backstage waiting for the act to come off so you can introduce the next act if that's what you're there for. So you never get to really interact with the listeners. So I'd rather go to Easter egg hunts and I can interact with them. And I enjoy that a lot, community type events, more than the show business part of what I do. And then you have to remember, I'm on the bottom rung of show business, as David Letterman. I'm on the radio. Nobody even sees me. They only hear me. So I'm on the bottom rung of show business, and that doesn't even bother me.
Well, you say that, but you keep people company on their commute. So you're, as much as you don't get to see them, you're part of their routine, and you're somebody that they know.
Yeah. And, you know, I have one contest a day, and it's called Tony's Trivia. It's a very easy, you know, I hate to see anybody lose. So I'll make the questions like, okay, who's older, Taylor Swift or Denzel Washington? You know, so I want you to win. I don't want anybody to have a bad experience when they call into the station. So I'll say first correct answer wins, and I give out the phone number, and then someone will call, and then like, it's Taylor Swift is younger, so Denzel be the older one. I said, you win, you know. I'm not here. I'm not the prize police, so I'm not trying to make it hard. That's not me.
So I want to step back for just a second. You were talking about the potential interviews that come in. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they come in when they're having trouble selling tickets to their event, and it's just an awareness thing?
Yes. It's very seldom that you'll interview someone for a show that's coming to town and the show's already sold out. There's really no reason to promote it.
Right.
There's no way to get a ticket because there's no tickets around. So why would I tick a listener off by dangling that carrot in front of them knowing that they can't get it? I'm like that old man. Remember that old man in that commercial? You got to be quicker. You got to be faster. I'm not going to be that guy. So usually, it's to help drive ticket sales. Yeah,
that would make sense.
And they tend to be very happy about that.
What's the craziest thing you've seen during the interview or the backstage moments?
I've seen someone's manager fight with someone who was working backstage, like physically fight. I've seen people get into arguments. A lot of egos are back there and stuff like that. And I've seen acts complain because their dressing room is smaller than someone else's dressing room and, you know, things like that. But I've learned over the years, those are pretty typical, not the fighting thing. That doesn't, you know, it used to be that radio stations would give away backstage passes and stuff like that. Well, about 20 years ago, I forgot where it was, but somebody got raped backstage. I just remember that happening. And so that got cut out because it's like, you know what?
We're not going to be part of that.
No. And so now what they'll do is they call them meet and greets.
Yeah.
So you'll meet the artist, but they put you in a room and it's controlled. And there'll be like maybe 10 listeners and they get to bring someone. So there's like 20 people there and the artist comes in. Some of them are cool and they say, hey, how y'all doing? Thanks for coming to the show. Appreciate it. Y'all want to take some pictures? Let's take some pictures, right? And then someone will go, hey, y'all, and they turn around and walk out. it just depends. You know, a lot of that is depending on sometimes an artist is, you know, they're humans and sometimes they're having a bad day. They have to do this meet and greet because it's part of their deal. Right. So they're going to give you the minimum. Most of them are pretty gracious. And so I try when a bad one happens and a listener calls me, I said, you know what? I'm not disputing what happened. I says, but you know, they're human. Maybe he was having a bad day, but I wasn't there. So I don't really know. So, cause usually when I have the meet and greet, I say, hey, everybody, glad y'all could be here tonight. Guess who's coming through the door. They walk through the door and everybody goes, oh, who's he? You know? And then I kind of walk out because at that moment, it's not about me. You know, they're not, I've never gone anywhere where anybody was there to see me. So
I'm here to see you, Tony.
I appreciate that, man.
So I know you like working the community stuff, and I think that's probably what I would enjoy too, especially being part of a family and going to Easter egg hunts and things like that seem like they're just fun.
Actually did one, was it last year? And I was at one, and some guy came up to me, and he says, wow, I didn't know you did these. He goes, I asked you to do ours. I'm like, well, when is yours? He says, this is in a couple hours. I said, well, where is it? And he says, one of the little suburban towns and, you know, over and stuff. I said, well, I'll go to that, right? And so my boss happened to be, a different boss I had at the time, he happened to be there with his family. And I said, hey, man, I said, that man over there, he wants me to come to his Easter egg hunt when I'm done here, man. So I'm going to go to that one when I'm done. And he looked at me. He goes, are you sure you want to do that? I was like, yeah, it'll be okay. And I did it and took pictures. And it was, you know, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I laughed with some people. And sometimes you run across someone that you hadn't seen in a long time. And it's good to have that reunion and stuff like right. that. It's kind of cool.
That's the fun part of your job, because you're behind a microphone in a room by yourself all day long. So when you get to go out in the community and see the people who do listen to your show and the people who have made you part of their routine, that's got to be a great feeling.
Yeah, it is.
What celebrity has surprised you and actually been a really good person and it was a really good event?
You know what? There's been a lot of them. I remember football player, later actor, Jim Brown. You know, I remember I was interviewing him one time and I asked him, I forgot what I asked him. He goes, you know, that's a good question, man. You know what I'm saying? He had these huge hands, right? And they were like meaty, right? And I remember that. I remember Barry White one time came by the station and we did an interview with him. And when he would talk, the walls would vibrate. Do you remember when your voice changed? He goes, yeah. He goes, I went, you know, one night I went to bed. And I woke up and came downstairs and mom says, morning, Barry. He goes, morning, mama. And everybody turned around. And he goes, and I was like, what was that? What was that, right? And then afterwards, he wanted to go have breakfast. So we took him to this soul food place that served breakfast. And I'd never seen a man eat that much bacon before. But he had a temper if you crossed him. But I was, you know, he never showed the temper to me. But I've, you know, seen it before. But, yeah, that was that. I had one comedian who was kind of a nerd, and he came into studio before we started. He goes, how long is this going to be? Because I want to go antiquing. I said,
we're done.
3-4 minutes. He goes, perfect. Right. And so that's why I said, hey, so-and-so is here. He's got 2 shows tonight, 2 tomorrow night, and 1 on Sunday. What's been going on, man? You know, nothing, man. I'm glad to be here in St. Louis and stuff like that, man. I said, are you working on some projects? He goes, yeah. He goes, I can't really talk about them yet. He goes, but trust me, this is going to be a lot of fun and people are going to really like it. Great. Hey, don't forget, he's here tonight for 2 shows, tomorrow 2 shows, 1 on Sunday. Hey, man, thanks for coming by. He goes, thanks for having me, man. Went to commercial break and he got up, put the headphones down, and he came and gave me a hug. He goes, you're a solid dude, man.
Grab me something nice while you're out.
I've had comedians that say, you know, I don't want to tell any jokes. I want to save them for the show. Okay, then you get the brief plan, because I need you to tell jokes to my listeners so they'll buy tickets to go see you and at the same time enjoy listening to us. But you don't want to do that? I'm not arguing with you. Okay.
It's gonna be
so-and-so is here, man. What's going on? Same thing, right? And I did it one time, and the promoter got mad. The guy from the comedy club got mad. And I said, well, what is it that you want me to do? I said, he doesn't want to be here. I said, you drove him over here. Did you not tell him what was expected? I said, because, you know, I'm following his lead. He don't want to be here, so I'm not going to keep him here, right? And he, like, raised hell with the program director, and they had to figure out something. So what they did was they had him come back in the afternoon when he was more up. So they came back in the afternoon, and it turned out fine. So, you know, there's that. But it happens.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, like you said, people are people and, you know, they've got their moments. I've worked with several artists over the years, and most of them, I'd say 95% of them are very, very nice. But the other 5%, I just chalk up as having a bad day.
Yeah. You know, you try to give them the benefit of the doubt and move on, because there are going to be some days when you're going to have a bad day.
Sure.
And you might say something that you regret later on and stuff like that.
It's my life, you know, with my wife.
Yeah. You know? So, and I'm lucky, like I said, like you said, I'm in a studio by myself. And then when I'm at home doing my voiceover work, I'm in a room by myself. So, you know.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about your voiceover work, because you're known for having a very rich, warm, energetic voice. And you can tell that here tonight. But when you're doing this voiceover work, do you like that better, or is it just different than the radio stuff?
It's different. I like it because it's challenging. Tiger Woods said one time that when he's playing golf, he's not really playing against anybody. He's playing against the course, because he's not hitting the ball to someone. They're going to hit it back. Right. He's actually playing the course. He's just playing with somebody, but he's actually playing against the course. And so when I do voice work, when I do an audition, I'm not competing against you who's doing the same audition. I'm competing with the person who's the casting director, who's got to decide whether I'm a better fit or you're a better fit. And so there's that. And I like learning and doing, and I take, you know, classes, coaching, things like that. I need to do more of it. I think the cheapest one I ran cost $175 an hour, right? Wow. So you really have to plan your budget, you know, unless you're balling like Jay Franzi, then, you know.
Yeah, well, of course. just don't tell the wife.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So when you're doing the voiceover work, do they ever ask you anything that's challenging or stretches your abilities, like maybe an accent that you're not typically familiar with?
You know, it was funny. Sometimes he'll say, can you be more, can you give me a Morgan Freeman? Like, no, can't give you a Morgan Freeman. I'm like, no, I can't do that. I said, no, this is me. And I had one guy,
an impersonator.
Said, yeah, right. And I had one guy, he says, you don't sound human. You sound like a machine. I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you, man. I said, this is my voice. And so we agreed to part ways. And, you know, I didn't get the gig. Where there's other, I did a voice for a guy who owned a series of clinics across the country. And I did one for him. And then I ended up doing 12. He liked it. And it was the same script over and over again. So I was very fortunate with that. I did one for some political stuff for a candidate running for county council in Riverside or something, California. Those are ones I've done lately. I did a corporate narration video, stuff like that. I've done a few phone trees. Hey, thanks for calling Jay Franzi Enterprises. For Jay, press 1. For, you know, so-and-so, press 2. To return to the operator, press star, you know, stuff like that. So I've done a few of those. And you'd be surprised what some of those things pay, though.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny, and I'm very grateful that people, you know, have complimented my voice. But you don't have to have a voice like this to do voiceover work. It used to be that way, but now, can you sell it? Anybody can do voiceover work. The question is, can you sell it? Can you do that, right? And that's, to me, is where, you know, take classes, watch YouTube videos, listen to podcasts. You get a ton of information on how to do certain things, and you learn some of the lingo and stuff like that. So anybody can do it. For whatever reason, God blessed me with this voice. And people say, to me, one of the biggest compliments my listeners can give me is this: you sound the same as you sound on the radio. Well, yeah, because this is how I talk. This is how I talk, right? And but, you know, because I don't, you know, I mean, you know, a long time ago, you had to be, you know, 11:30 a.m. KWTZ. This is Tony Scott. Today's weather. Oh, it's going to be sunny today, everybody. You know, and it's like, You don't have to do
that
anymore.
Right.
No, it's not. Now it's, you know, and the big thing in voiceover work now is the conversational delivery. Well, as someone who spent a career over 40 years in radio, my voice may be conversational at times, but it can be, most of the time, it's, you know, when I'm doing stuff in front of a microphone, it turns radio-y, if that's a word, right? And so you kind of have to beat the radio out of your voice. But I still do radio. So I got to be able to put it, you know, to some degree, put it back. And it's a, kind of one of those things where you constantly work at it to try. And there are little tips and tricks, like if I'm doing a conversational audition, I'll hit record and then I'll start talking. I have this Mr. Bunny here, right? And so I'll start talking to Mr. Bunny and I'll say, hey, man, how was your day today? Good. Did you get any phone calls today? Anything? Any opportunities? Anything like that? And then I slowly transition to the audition using that same cadence and stuff. And go, you know, if you want to get your car worked on, you really need to go to Sears Automotive Center. They've got some great mechanics here. You know, so I stay conversational. So you kind of use a trick like that by ramping up to it.
Right.
That, you know, that I've learned watching videos and listening to podcasts. So, you know, I didn't invent that. That's something that's been around forever, and I guess, and that's how I learned it.
I laugh because my wife tells me all the time that I should start doing some voiceover work.
You and should.
I told her, I said, babe, you know, I've got one voice. It's monotone like this, and that's all I do.
You'd be surprised with a script in front of you and some direction what you could pull off, man. You would be very surprised. Some people I know who do voiceover work like full time have very monotone voices, but they're voice actors. We're all voice actors. like a watch a car commercial, and you'll see one, you hear one guy go, you know, $30 down, get you the car, you know, and then you hear a guy go, you know, the all new 2024 Lexus, you know, so it's just, and sometimes it's the same guy,
right?
It's just the style that the agency wants, the advertiser wants. I want something laid back, you know, and a lot of people who do automotive spots, when COVID hit and the world stopped and we were all scared of dying, the advertising thing, they didn't want the, you know, $30 down. They didn't want that. They wanted something more human, more conversational, more compassionate. And it kind of changed things a little bit. So, you know, but you got the biggest asset you have, if you're interested in voiceover, is that you have a voice. The rest of it is just technique, you know, and there's a difference between like radio commercials that I would do at the radio station and commercials that I would do as voiceover work. In radio, it's like a mass unit. You're just getting them in and getting them out. You're just getting through it. Where in voiceover work, you have script interpretation, you've got direction. You know, they're telling you how they want the delivery. I want it soft. Can you hit? And then the words they want you to hit, they'll usually put them in bold letters. So you have that going for you. So it's just a lot of, and to me, it's a lot of fun.
It seems like it would be a lot of fun, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about your room for a minute, because we see the green screen.
Mm-hmm.
But you've built a studio in your home to do this.
Yeah, I'm in a walk-in closet that I converted. I bought some sound treatment, and I have some lights and stuff like that. And it wasn't really expensive. It just caught some sales and some stuff like that, and stuff that I've acquired over some years and stuff like that. And I turned this walk-in closet into a booth. And the interesting thing is, like, anybody can do this. If you want to know, like, about closets with your clothes in it, right? Because when you start out, you don't really know if this is going to work or not. So you start doing voiceover in your closet because clothes absorb sound. And so it helps deaden. Like, stand outside your closet and take out your phone and record yourself talking. Do that and then walk into your closet and say the same thing. And when you play it back, you're going to hear such a difference because your voice, it bounces off the walls and then back into the microphone, unless the room is treated to absorb sound. So when it absorbs sound, it holds it. And so it takes out the echo. But if someone were to do that, you'll find that the sound is different and it'll start making sense to you. You know, so it's something that, you know, but I have this, and see the Nutty History channel that I do, we had this idea where they wanted to do a video component where I would be on camera reading some of the script, a couple sentences, they go back to the video part. And I would do this like four or five times during this 15-minute video. And so that's what the green screen is for. And when they talked to me about it, I said, yeah. I said, but you know what? I need some lights. I don't have any lights, studio lights. So, you know, and they said, well, can you get some on Amazon? I'm like, yeah. They said, well, find some on Amazon and send us a link and then we'll send them to you. Okay. So I did, and they did, and I got them. And then, you know, when you do voiceover work, your microphone typically is 6 inches or less. You know, you can be closer. You don't want to be any further than this, right? But when you do video, your microphone has to be out of the shot. Like the microphone I'm talking to you with right now with is right here. It's out of the shot. See? So it's going to sound different because this mic isn't made for that. This is a shotgun mic up here. So they noticed that and they said, you know, how can we fix that? And I was like, oh, you can use a shotgun mic. And he said, well, how much are those? I said, depends on your budget. He was like, well, what's the best run? I said, about $1,000. He goes, okay, not the best. I said, but what else is there? I said, well, let me do some research. And I found this mic. They got great reviews and it was like $200.
Which one is it?
This is a Cinco D2 shotgun mic. And he said, you think this will fix the problem? I said, yeah, it'll fix the problem. He says, cool. And he said, you'll have it in 3 days. And he sent it to me. And, you know, and so they're very good. My laptop went out. It crashed and it wouldn't turn back on or anything, right? And so I called my project manager and I says, man, I says, I can't get another one for, you know, a couple of days. And he was like, okay. And so about, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 hours later, he called me and he goes, you know, we can't wait that long, man. You know, and I thought his next sentence says, we're going to just move on to someone else. He goes, go to the computer store and find a laptop you like and text me how much it is. And we're going to cash app you the money. I said, okay. He goes, can you do that like right now? I'm like, well, I got to put some shoes on. He goes, yeah, you don't need shoes. Go, just go. All right. So I did. And they did. And I got the laptop. And I'm talking to you on this laptop right now. It was like $670 or something. And then with tax, it was, forgot how much it was. But I told him $670. And he says, is that with tax? I'm like, yeah, it wasn't with tax. I paid the tax because, you know, it's like, okay, whatever. And which he had to pay the tax. But they're very good to me. And I adore each and every one of them. And we're a great team. And I always make myself available as much as possible. And I'll do stuff. And sometimes he says, because the guy, the editor, is in Croatia, right? So we're on different time zones. So when I'm working, he's sleeping. And when I'm sleeping, he's working. It's kind of something like that. So I try and do it like at night. And then send it, and then he'll have it when he gets up in the morning, and it works out that way. So, but we have a good system, and it works out great.
Well, sir, I know you're a advocate for mental health. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I was diagnosed with clinical depression over 20 years ago. My program director, the guy who brought me to St. Louis, he pulled me in his office one time. He goes, I need to talk to you. He says, I'm not going to talk to you as your boss. I'm talking to you as a friend. He says, you have an incredible amount of talent. He said, but there's something wrong with you. I was like, what the hell you mean something wrong with me? What are you talking about? He said that. He goes, everything sets you off. He goes, nobody wants to work with you. He says, you know, and that's going to hold you back from making more money. He says, we have this thing called the Employee Assistance Program. It's a phone number. You call this number and they will set you up with a session to talk to someone. And if they think that you need to move on, they'll send you to someone else. If they think that they can fix you in 2 or 3 sessions, then you'll go to that person that you're going to go see. He goes, I won't know who you're going to see. We won't know anything. This is between, I'll give you the number, then I'm out of it. He said, well, you call the number. I said, I don't know, man. He said, well, think about it. So I thought about it for a couple of weeks and I finally called the number and I went and talked to the guy. It was an hour session. And after an hour, he says, okay. He goes, our session's over. I said, so what do you think? He goes, oh yeah, you need to see somebody. he said, yeah, I figured that like 10 minutes in, you needed to see somebody, man. So, and you know, as the older you get, and Jay, I don't know how old you are, but the older you get, the more you desire peace in your life. And the older you get, the more peace you want. So I'm at a point in, I mean, I'll be 64 this month. So I'm at a point in my life where peace is very important to me.
55, sir. I'm 55.
You're 55. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
You look great, man.
Well, thank you. Tell my wife.
He looks great. Mrs. Frank.
Oh, so she's over your house. That makes more sense.
Your wife is the one who actually liked my voice for your podcast.
She is. She did the selection.
So thank you, Mrs. Franzi, for that. I appreciate that.
There you go. She actually did. She liked, I mean, there was maybe 3 or 4, but she chose you for sure.
So, yeah, when you told me that, I was like, wow, that's crazy, right? So I was like, that's really cool.
She doesn't like my voice. She liked your voice.
She likes your voice. She just, you know, she doesn't want you to get the big head, so she'll say stuff like that. But she likes your voice, especially when you say stuff like, I love you, and yes, you can have the charge card and go to the mall. They love that, man. So
am I supposed to tell her things like that?
Well, you know, balance. You need balance.
All right, sir. Well, we do this thing here we call Unsung Heroes, where we take a moment to shine the light on somebody who works behind the scenes or somebody who may have supported you along the way. Do you have anybody you'd like to shine a little light on?
There's a guy whose name is Mark McCray. When I was in Dallas and I was unemployed and I was feeling low and I was desperate, you know, because I needed an income and stuff like that. And, you know, I was doing the Uber Eats thing and all that. And then I needed to see a doctor, didn't have the money for it. He paid for it. He hired me to work at his podcast studio. He's the one who hired me to do the Sharpton thing. And he kept telling me over and over again, he would tell me, hang in there, man. He goes, you have too much talent for someone not to pick you up. So just keep the faith and keep going. And we have become incredible friends, and he's someone who I've learned a lot from and admire and respect. And when we were getting ready to move back to St. Louis, because sometimes we would go out to lunch and he always paid. We, I mean, we didn't go anywhere fancy, but we, you know, we go have something and he'd always pay for it because he knew, you know, I basically didn't have the money. But then when things started turning around little by little, and then when it was time to move to St. Louis, things were going a lot better than it was. I'll say that. And so I and my wife took him and his wife out for a dinner at a very, very nice seafood restaurant. And when the check came, and he knew I was going to pay for it, right? Because I told him I wanted to take him and his wife out. And when the check came, he said, you need me to help you with that? And he said that so that I would say, no, man, I got this, right? Because he wanted me to say that because he thought that would make me feel good. And it did. He's a man who thinks different. He had a brain tumor. And he got past that. I didn't know him at the time, but he told me the story. And he thinks different. He thinks with more compassion. Now, he can be assertive when he needs to be, but he has a lot of compassion in his heart. And he's a very good man and a great father to his son. And that's someone, he's a hero for sure.
A big thanks to Tony for taking the time to share his stories with us. And thank you for taking the time to hang with me here. As always, I really do appreciate it. Please follow, share, and connect on all the socials. You could even tell a friend. I'd appreciate that too. You could do all of this and find the links to everything mentioned over at jfranzi.com/episode59. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Jay Franzi Show. Make sure you visit us at jfranzi.com. Follow, connect, and say hello. This episode has been brought to you by VR Knives, your source for 100% custom knives made by a true rock star. So, if you're in the market for a new piece of art, reach out to VR Knives. 407-421-5528. 407-421-5528.